Too many causes overwhelm us. We can't decide which one matters most. And I said before, it's not the dollar, it's the daily. It's to become a giver.
We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here I am.
And here I am with Shai Davidai.
My guest today is an entrepreneur, someone who started a daily giving system for people around the world that has just exploded and has given hundreds of thousands of dollars so far, and we'll hear all about it. So here I am with Jonathan Doniff.
Thanks for having me, Shai.
Thank you for coming. I know you're extremely busy. I know you have a lot of balls that you're juggling in the air, so it's great that you're here. I'm going to start with a question that we start every episode. Jonathan Doniff, what kind of a Jew are you?
Great question. I am a Jew that loves every Jew. I'm a grandson of four Holocaust survivors. In particular, I had a very special bond with my mother's father, and he loved Jews. That was his thing, and he modeled that for me. And he had a very small synagogue in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he died when he was 92, but what would have been his 100th birthday, I think there's like 300 people came to celebrate his life. And the diversity of who showed up was just such a tribute to the kind of man he was. And I feel like that was passed down to me. It doesn't matter to me who you are or whatever. I love all people, but in particular, I just love my brothers and sisters.
What kind of lessons did he teach you?
In particular, he taught me how to give. And there's a story that is, famous in my family, that when he was in Siberia in the brutal labor camps, they basically were given one scrap of barely edible piece of bread every day. And he was 4'8", by the way, very, mm-hmm. very small man. And every day he would see the other prisoners who were much larger than he was starving. And every day he made a choice and he took off half of his bread and he gave it to another prisoner who was much larger than him. And then one day, the guards came into the barracks early and they found my grandfather praying with his tefillin. And they thought he was a spy. And they took him out to execute him. And in front of everyone, they wanted to make an example out of him. And they raised their rifles and they were about to shoot. And all the men went nuts, screaming, "No, don't shoot." And the guards got scared there would be a riot. So they put the guns down and they spared my grandfather. And that's what he was. He was a giver. And then even when my mother grew up, every day they'd come home from school and they had this little tzedakah box that was a life insurance salesman came one day and he listened to his pitch and he gave him this, like, the box where you put a penny or nickel quarter and it counts as you. And my mother and her sisters loved the tzedakah box. And every day they'd come home from school, they'd fight over who got to put money in the tzedakah box. Uh-huh. And I didn't even know that story until after I started daily giving. So it's just kind of interesting how it was sort of passed down to the DNA a little bit.
Well, we're going to get to daily giving in a minute, but I want to ask you, do you remember some of your earliest giving?
You know, it's funny. I worked in a camp for special needs children. That was when I was like 18, 19, Camp Hask. And that changed my life. Until then, I was planning on going into business. And once I spent 7 weeks with special needs children, like 24/7, you're like their parent. That was like the first experience where I really felt like I was a giver. Mm-hmm. That really changed me. I decided after that I wanted to be a doctor. Like totally changed. I already was like a freshman in college. And then I switched to pre-med after that summer.
So you refer to yourself as a giver and you refer to lessons from your grandfather as the teaching to give. And those two things in a way are not always compatible, right? If you're a giver, that's something that you are. But typically you can't teach someone to be something. So can you teach people to give and give money, give time, give expertise or resources? Or is it just something that we have?
I am so glad you asked that question, because that's something that I'm really feeling recently so strongly about, that you can teach people to be a giver, that giving is a muscle. And when you don't use a muscle, it atrophies. And so how do you combat atrophy? You train the muscle. And so giving, if you make it a daily habit, and it doesn't have to be giving money. It could be giving a compliment to a stranger. It could be visiting a lonely neighbor. It could be calling someone who's sick. But if you start giving every day, giving will change you. Giving aligns us with our true nature. If you think about it, every species on Earth is hardwired in our DNA to be givers.
Wait, explain that.
Okay.
I have to say, spiders and cockroaches don't feel like givers to me.
So,
and some people, by the way.
Every species on Earth is hardwired to have offspring, to give life. So we're givers at our core. Even if we don't realize it, we were put on this earth so that we could give. So when we give, we are actually aligning with our highest, truest, deepest essence, which is to be givers.
Wow.
So the reward for giving is that you are a giver.
The reward for giving is that you are a giver.
Yeah. The point is not to give so you can be happy. The point is to give to align you with your true nature.
But then there are some people that would say, we only just give out of complete self-interest and there's no such thing as altruism. And anytime we give, there's a hidden, you know, reason, and maybe we're not even aware of the hidden reason. It's a very cynical view of the world.
I think there's probably some truth to that. But if that person who's giving for the wrong reasons gives every day or gives a lot, I believe it will change them.
I see. So let's talk about daily giving.
Okay.
And just to set the stage, you're a chiropractor from White Plains, New York. You have a quite successful practice. You have a lot of patients. We talked before we started recording about how busy you are. And then something happens in 2019 and you decide to start this new thing called daily giving. What happened? What is daily giving and what is the origin of it?
Yeah, I was not looking. I was not aspiring to start a nonprofit. It wasn't even a thought in my mind. And my friend told me about this YouTube video of a near-death experience. And I was always kind of intrigued by near-death experiences. It was like a two-hour video, and 2 hours long. You know, like I was watching 20 minutes here, 10 minutes here. And the video was of this rabbi with a long beard, and he also had tattoos. I found that interesting. And he said that I used to be a man of like I lived a terrible life of crime and just selfishness and just disregard for other people.
To be fair, tattoos doesn't mean that you're bad.
I love that. I love tattoos. I love tattoos. Like my patients, I'm always seeing all that. I'm asking to see their colorful tattoos. And I noticed how great these tattoos are.
And I'm a good person. I try.
But it was such a stark difference to see this man, this rabbi with a long beard and then like tattoos, right?
Of course.
And he said that he died of a drug overdose. And before he came back to life, he was basically in this black abyss of pain and suffering for what felt like 2 billion years. And the message he got was, you don't even have one single mitzvah, not one good deed to elevate you to the next level. And right after I finished watching that video, I walked into my local synagogue and I put a dollar into the tzedakah box, the charity box, like I've done thousands of times in my life. And I had the only epiphany I ever had in my life. That no matter how much money I give to tzedakah, I still get a mitzvah, a good deed for this $1. And I was like, wow, you never know what mitzvah is going to put you over the edge.
Break that down for people. Some of the people that are watching or listening may not be observant Jews. Many of them are not Jews. What is a mitzvah? What is a tzedakah? And why doesn't it matter how much money you put? Those are three things that you take for granted, but a lot of people won't.
Thank you. A mitzvah is a good deed that connects us to our purpose. And giving in the Jewish tradition is one of those very, very important mitzvahs that connects us to our purpose. And so it's a common custom when you're in synagogue, there's always a charity box. That's a charity in Hebrew is called tzedakah. And it's just a common custom when you walk into synagogue, even though I think Jews are very philanthropic in general, we still, no matter how much you give, it's just a custom. You put a dollar in the charity box, and very often the rabbi of that synagogue takes that charity, and that's it's there for people in case there's someone poor, someone loses their job in the community, so they save money over the years, so that it's like discretionary fund, so you can give to help other people who need it.
Right. And that's something that's common for many houses of worship, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So again, I just had this epiphany that I still get a mitzvah, this good deed for this $1. And I thought to myself, how can I guarantee myself this mitzvah of giving every single day, no matter what? That was the idea that popped in my head. It was so shy. I never had an idea that was like so like ingrained. I knew at that moment it was like ingrained in my soul. Like I thought I had this billion dollar idea. And I got so excited. I ran home and I started Googling, is anyone automating daily charity giving? I couldn't find anyone. So I called my best friends. I called my website guy, Shaul, and I was like, Shaul, what do you think about this idea? And he's like, I love it. I said, can you build me a website? He said, absolutely. So we started meeting, figuring out, I don't know anything about a nonprofit. And I remember I had this idea that I called this pretty famous rabbi because this rabbi has a worldwide following. And I was like, if I could get him on board talking about giving tzedakah daily with daily giving, I could blow this thing up. And he said, you need to have like a council of recognizable rabbis that so that people know it's not going to your kid's college fund. I was like, okay, that's a good idea. And so we launched the website on January 1st, 2019. And what we did is we automated a platform to try to get people all over the world to give $1 of charity together every single day. And every day we give the entire amount to a different incredible Jewish nonprofit all over the world. And it's a diversified portfolio of charities. I mean, we give to poverty, we give to widows and orphans and cancer and substance abuse and mental health and special needs and life-saving and outreach and stem cells. And it's just the most unbelievable list. And we get told all the time, people when they're deciding who to give charity to, they often look at our list because we vet them very carefully. We take it very seriously. We're now giving out over $8 million a year. We don't take a penny. 100 cents of every dollar goes to charity. And every day, all our 22,749 givers as of this morning get an email that tells them where their money went that day and who they helped with a video and a link. So they learn about new organizations and people love it. And what I've seen that more than the money we've gained, more than the money that we've given to date, we've given out over $26 million. But more than that is that the way it changes people when they give daily. It's not about the dollar, it's about the daily.
So yeah, so I want to ask for so many things I want to ask just to make it clear because you've wrote some numbers and I think people might miss the numbers and not realize how big this is. So people are giving a dollar a day, you have, or more if they want to, you have 22,479 daily givers. Yeah. So that's a minimum of $22,479 a day going to a charity. And you have that 365 days a week.
Days a year, yeah.
Days correct. A year, yes.
Yeah.
But why do that and not just ask people to donate on the new year on Rosh Hashanah $365 and then you split it 365 days instead of automating it so that every day they give $1?
So let me just give you a little bit of background on how it works. We couldn't charge the credit card every day because the transaction fee would be 30 cents and then 30% of it would be gone.
Right.
So we are their shaliach. We're their messenger. I actually, from my phone, every single day give out the money. And every day it goes up. Thank God for the last almost seven years, it's been going up every day. And so basically they sign up for either monthly or annually. And then we give the money for them every single day. That's how it works on a technical side.
I see.
And every day they get an email reminding them that they're a giver. And that's what I hear over and over again, how this reminder, people are like, I hate getting, don't send me emails, right? We all get inundated with emails. I've had so many. I have one CEO, a friend of mine, he's a CEO of a big company. He told me, he's like, I get like 10,000 emails a day. But your email, the daily giving email, is one, the only one I open up every day because of how it makes me feel. I actually have a great story about the emails, that there was this gentleman who signed up for $1 a day. And then a minute later, he signed up again with a different email. And then a third time. And then 5 minutes, he signed up five times with five different email addresses. And I called him. And I said, thank you so much. Who did you sign up for? And he said, I signed up for my wife and my three children. And I said, wow, that's incredible. How old are your kids? And he said, they're 1, 2, and 4. He said, I've already reserved their Gmail addresses. And now in 8 or 9 years, when I give them their password for the first time and they open up their email, they're going to see only one email. But that email will be repeated thousands of times. And the subject will say, thank you for your donation. And they'll know that they've been givers their entire lives.
Wow. So what is in this email? Now I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So the email basically says how much we're giving that day. So today was 22,749. And it says the name of the organization. It has a link to the organization. It has a video about the organization. It says how much to date we've given out, 26 point something million dollars so far. And it says, based on our numbers, how much we'll be giving over the next 365 days, which is now over $8.3 million. Wow. It's short. It's sweet. Our open rate, just to give you an idea, we have, like, again, all these people, our open rate is over 50%. People open that email daily, which is crazy. I didn't know this. I didn't know anything about nonprofits. But if you have anybody who has a nonprofit, if they send a quarterly newsletter and 20% open their quarterly newsletter, that's considered excellent. So the email, I think, is sort of like our special sauce.
Right, because people want to be reminded of, you know, their good deed.
Yeah.
But more than that, they want to know where their money is going.
Yeah.
They want to know what they're doing in the world.
It's interesting to hear the different, I don't know, dichotomy is the right word, but about the different opinions of why people like it. Some people love to just see the number go up. They don't even look at the charity that gave that day. Mm-hmm. Some people love to learn about the new charity. Some people click and like watch the video every day. And it just means something different to different people. But what surprised me is how people feel about themselves when they give daily. Like I've heard this over and over again, that when they get that email and they're reminded they're a giver that day, it lights a spark in them.
But I want to push on that, not because I disagree. I just want to really understand this.
Yeah.
Especially because you said you've discussed with rabbis and you've had many rabbis have now signed on to this and their communities. Isn't intentionality, the act of doing the good deed, doesn't that count for something, right? Like when you mentioned like your mother coming home and arguing with her siblings, who gets to put the penny? We put it our home. We have our little JNF blue box, right? And we put some money every once in a while. And my kid loves that. Mm-hmm. Isn't there something missing when you just automate the good deed? I mean, it's good for the world, but is it good for the self?
Yeah. The great sage Maimonides says, if you could give $100 to one person or $1 to 100 different people, you should give $1 to 100 different people, because even though the perceived impact is much lower, that what that does is it builds the giving muscle. So your point is, are you really building that giving muscle if it's automated? And so it's a good question, and I can't say for fact, but what I'm saying is that daily email and that reminder, because people say like, even if I can't tell you the story. I was having such a bad day, or my day was just whatever. And then I got that email reminder, oh, you're a giver. And I just felt great. Mm-hmm. It's reminding me, oh yeah, I gave to it. And so no matter what they're doing, they feel good about themselves. And today, in today's day and age, I don't have to tell you, right? Like our phones, our legs are vibrating all day. And you know, just from the phones and the beeps and the everything we're doing, it's nonstop. And it's hard living in 2025. Like there's a lot going on. And I personally think that we all need to have so much more self-compassion. And I think that this daily email, the reminder of being a giver, really helps with self-compassion. Mm-hmm. Because we could be having a bad day or having an average day, and then we're reminded, I'm good. I'm good. We need to be reminded we're good.
Yeah,
life is hard.
In a way, it's also you get that good feeling boost when you sign up. You get that good feeling boost with every email or with many emails. And you probably get a good feeling boost when you tell people, hey, did you hear about this charity? Oh, how did you hear about it? Oh, I give in this thing called daily giving.
And besides that, like, you know, giving feels great. But when you give with 22,000 of your brothers and sisters from all over the world, of all spectrums, of every type of, not just Jews, but non-Jews also, it feels amazing to be part of something like that. Like one woman called me after she lost her job. And she said she had just signed up, and she said that, you know, she thought she had nothing left to give, but then she was starting to give a dollar a day every day, and she felt like, wow, I really felt like it reminded me that I'm a part of something bigger. Mm. And, you know, it really struck me, because giving doesn't just affect the other person. It changes you, the giver.
So that we've been talking about the givers, but let's now transition to the other side, the charities.
Yeah.
How do you choose which charities? What's your criteria?
Yeah, so the criteria is that it has to be a Jewish charity, has to be national or international, because we have people from 43 countries who give, and you know, we don't want to just give to a local, you know, a little local place in Chicago or just New York or something, right? So it has to be from everywhere. So there's enough, trust me, there's enough people like, are there enough national? I'm like, trust me, they're like,
unfortunately, there's a lot of need in the world.
There are, I think, over 50,000 nonprofits in Israel alone. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of need. We had 700 applications in the last 3 years.
So charities apply to you. You're not chasing them. They come to you.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they apply. And it almost, listen, I have a very small team. It's like very bare bones. And it took actually a lot of time. We haven't added, at first, the first couple of years, we added every year. We added a couple. We wanted to give a meaningful amount to each one. We didn't want to just give, you know, if you're giving $1,000 a day, then you're, you know, but we wanted to really have a meaningful impact on them. So we didn't want to add too often. So every day a different one gets. We had 71 organizations. And so every 71 days, they'd get again. So they were getting like four or five times a year from us. So like right now, they're getting over $100,000 each a year from us, which is a significant impact. You know, $100,000 to almost any organization puts you in the top 1-2% of their givers. And so it was really hard. And we had to figure out a system of how to vet them properly. Like we have some lawyers that volunteer for us that do the due diligence for us. And we look into impact. We look into how they, you know, financials, we look very carefully into their financials. And yet it's really hard because some organizations I can tell you that I'm like, they're all amazing. They really are amazing. But, you know, one day we're giving to, you know, orphans and the next day widows and the next one, blind children with multiple disabilities. And there's some people that might be perceived as not as great, but we really feel like one of the other things that people would love is the diversified portfolio. Like it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, you can't give to everyone. And so for that $1 a day, you get to feel like I'm really helping like such an amazing amount of people across a whole spectrum of different causes. Like my children, as they were growing up, like again, we've been doing this for almost 7 years. So my oldest is 18, my youngest is 16, you know, and so they grew up at the Shabbat table learning about charities. They learned about problems. They learned about charities that are solving problems that they didn't even know those problems existed.
Mm. So are, of course, all charities that you work with are worthwhile and have value, but do some have a deep meaning for you?
Yeah, there are a couple that are like my favorites.
Or maybe I should ask who was the first one or in the first roster.
Yeah, I mean, Camp Hask, I already mentioned, I was a counselor there. It's a camp in Parksville, New York, and people come from all over the world. Special, like it is, you have, it's not just kids, actually all the way through adults. And they go there for seven weeks a year. Super, and they take some. There are people with rare muscular dystrophies. There's only 14 people in the world with their problem. And then you have autistic children, Down syndrome, to the most complicated things. Some in wheelchairs that they can't walk, can't communicate. And then these, it's not just what it does for the parents, you know, of these families, because they have all their kids and they can't. When you have a special needs child, it's your whole world. And so what that does for the parents, and then what it does for the counselors, how it changes these teenagers' lives to take care of 24/7. Think about that. I had a camper who had a seizure at 2 a.m. You don't know. You're like, I don't know what that was. They're convulsing all over the place. You know, I thought they were going to, and then afterwards you think they're dead, you know? So that was, yeah, that's a great one. Aleph is an organization that helps. I love just the diversity. They help families of Jews who are incarcerated. Mm. You know, so someone goes to jail, the kids, the mother, they've spent all their savings on defending whatever they're defending, innocent, guilty, whatever, and the kids can't go to camp, they can't afford anything, and Aleph is there to help the families, or even support the prisoners, like to just prisoner rights. And they don't have all prisoners. They vet, like,
of course.
You know, they vet who they help, right? You know, so that's another one. Karen Orr in Israel that helps blind children with multiple disabilities is unbelievable. You know, it's like the Helen Kellers of the world. I visited there. It's just it makes you so grateful for what you have. RCCS is called Rofei Cholim Cancer Society. This is unbelievable. If someone, God forbid, gets cancer, like, what do? You don't know what to do. You call them first of all. They have people that know every different type of cancer. Hmm. Like, they're not doctors, but they literally, when they're on the phone, they know as much as doctors. They have their specialties. So you say you have liposarcoma, and they give you their liposarcoma specialist, and they tell you which doctors in the world are the best specialists. Now, not everyone can get into these doctors, but they have the connections. So then they get you in to see the top doctors in the world at what you have, what kind of cancer. That's one thing they do. Then let's say your insurance doesn't cover that doctor. So they will know which insurances will, and they will pay for your premiums. And sometimes those premiums are crazy. But let's say a premium costs $40,000 for this insurance. So they'll pay the $40,000, that will get that person $6 million worth of care. That's number two. And the third thing is that, and I know this because unfortunately my brother-in-law passed away at 43, 4 years ago of cancer.
Sorry.
And I saw firsthand from my sister what it was like. And so as if it's not painful enough to see your loved one go through that and all that comes with that, but then the bills start coming in the mail. And I don't know if you know what it's like with bills and insurance in America. It's insane. You don't know what to do. You don't understand. I'm a doctor and I don't even understand half of it, right? And you send it, you get a coordinator. RCCS has their own person for you, and you just send all your bills to them and they just take care of everything.
Wow. And you can help that with at least one minimum of $1 a day.
That's right. We're giving out $100,000 each to each of these organizations. Yeah.
Are there any charities you wouldn't work with?
Good question. We have back to your question, I didn't fully answer it. So once we vet them, we have an allocation committee. And then once the allocation committee picks the choose the charities for, again, a lot, we also want to, we don't want to give 10 of the same types of things. We like to spread it out, but then once the allocation committee decides who we want to join, then we go back to the rabbinical council to make sure to answer their questions, to make sure that they give their stamp of approval on who we're giving. I can't think of the top of my head anyone that we wouldn't give to,
I'm going to ask a question that I hope you take it as a really just curious, inquisitive question. There's no judgment here.
Yeah, please.
But especially like the way you talk about daily giving and the way you go on the website and, it's heavily Jewish. Mm-hmm. It's tzedakah and mitzvahs. It's Jewish charities. It's a rabbinical council. And you've mentioned like giving with my 22,000 brothers and sisters. But why focus on the Jewish? Are you not shooting yourself in the foot a little bit by only going for, there's a lot of Jews out there,
sure,
but we're still just 15 million.
15 million Jews and 8 billion people. So, right.
Like you could do daily giving with, open it up to everyone, both in the givers, but also in the charity.
Yeah.
And make an even bigger impact. And yet that feels like an intentional decision.
Yeah. Right. I love the question. There's something called the Jewish pledge. I think it's called the Jewish giving pledge. Mike Levin, former Home Depot co-founder, started it. And what they found was that even though there's so much, the Jews give on an unusually high level, there's a lot of philanthropy given by Jews, but there was, I don't want to misquote, but the numbers were crazy, that even though there's billions and billions or maybe billions of dollars given out every year from Jews, only a very, very small amount of that was actually going to Jewish causes. So the Jewish giving pledge, I don't know if you can Google it, Mike Levin, Jewish Future Pledge, thank you. What their mission is to make it so that Jews know that there's 8 billion people in the world. And we, not to say we don't, I give personally, the dogs that, for blind people, I give that, for not Jews, and I give other non-Jewish causes. But if you're going to give to a hospital wing, a name like, give $10 million to a hospital or the philanthropic, New York philanthropic, whatever, the Philharmonic mm-hmm. Orchestra, right? Not to say these causes are not important, but to also remember, so the Jewish Future Pledge is trying to get Jews to give at least 50% of their giving to Jews, right? So I don't know if that answers your question, but that was kind of like the same feel. Like there are, by the way, I do have in the back of my head that I would like to start daily giving. Like kind of say, look, maybe someone who sees this podcast, who sees what we're doing, and says, wow, there's only 15 million Jews in the world, and in 6 years he's given $26+ million. What if we do open this world? It is in the back of my head that I do want to start this for the whole world and use daily giving as the model for that. Mm-hmm. But at first, that was the idea, to start with the brothers and sisters, try and get us to unify. I told you we started this for your first question. It wasn't planned, but like I am an Achdu Jew. I am a unity Jew. I just love. I don't know why. I just love all Jews. Yeah. It doesn't matter who you are, and so that was my first priority. But I hope one of your I'll get that call and someone donate $10 million and we'll blow this up for the whole world.
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine being able to take this mitzvah and multiply it by 100 million.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, just for people, for full disclosure, we've met once before for a very brief moment. We were boarding a plane to Israel, and I was there to visit family, and you said, yeah, we're going to dedicate an ambulance for the Magen David Adom, the Israeli version of the Red Cross. And that kind of led me to think, oh, this is probably this new initiative. And I was very surprised to hear that you've been around since 2019. But I do wonder how, if anything, has changed in what you do since the October 7 massacre.
Yeah, so on October 9th, because October 8th was still the holiday here, but on October 9th, we mobilized and we started an Israel emergency fund. And I haven't looked recently at the numbers, but that first couple of months, we raised like just by sending an email and putting on our daily email that it was available a separate fund for Israel Emergency Fund. I think we raised something like $600,000-$700,000 extra.
Separate from the daily giving.
Separate from daily giving. But we give it out every day. So over half of the organizations we give to are in Israel. So we would still give the daily giving. Actually, I think for a while now, I'm going back, it's been a while already, but I think for a while we stopped giving to the American ones and we only gave to the Israeli ones. Because what people don't understand is that even if you're an Israeli organization, it has nothing to do with the war, you were affected. Everyone is affected. So nonprofits were affected so much. They were like, they're really suffering. So we gave the money, but we also got donors to match. So I believe, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I believe that $600,000 or $700,000 we actually raised extra from our givers, we turned that into like something like $3-4 million of matches. That we would go to the organizations in Israel and they said, get us matchers. And they did. And it was amazing. And
wow. So
yeah, so we were able to help so many people. And we still actually give, we still have Israel Mercy Fund open and we still give we still have money in it, still flowing through. So we're like, why not? Keep it open. And so every Friday we give the regular portion of daily giving and we still give $1,000 extra to some other Israeli organization. That's part of our roster.
And, Has the October 7 massacre and the ensuing war, has it affected the, not the charities that you give, but the people that sign up? Have you seen a change or a surge in Jewish giving?
Yeah. So there's a couple of when people sign up for daily giving, I didn't mention the website in case someone watching wants to sign up, it's dailygiving.org. And so when you go on the website and you sign up, for a long time, I believe it's still there, you could sign up to protect an Israeli soldier. Because there's the famous line of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, that says, Tzedakah tatzil mimavet, that giving charity saves lives. And so people very often sign up in protection for someone else.
What does that mean to protect? So that means you just...
The merit. Thank
you. The giving them the name.
The merit of that mitzvah, that good deed that you're doing every single day should be in the merit of a recovery for someone who's sick. Or to uplift a soul of someone who's passed. It's another one we see people do. So people sign up in merit of protecting a soldier, which is so meaningful. I have a first cousin who has two children in the army who've served over 400 days in reserve duty. And I signed up for an extra dollar a day for their protection. And to me, that there's nothing more meaningful than that, right? Like it just, it's just very special. And the other thing that was a wild thing that happened is that I was visiting on another trip to Israel, visiting some of the charities we give to. We've done a couple of daily giving missions where we go on the ground and we bring some of the philanthropists that support our back-end operations. I can't remember if we said daily giving doesn't take a penny. So I fundraised my entire budget separately, two different bank accounts, the charity account and then our operations account. So we take some once a year, we take some of those philanthropists to Israel to show them what we're doing on the ground. And I got to spend Shabbat with 36 of the hostages' families. This is early on. This is like maybe like around day 120th, an organization we give to called Kesher Yehudi. And that was mind-blowing, that experience of seeing that firsthand. In fact, just last week when the last 20 hostages were released. Living hostages were released. A number of them were some of them that I spent Shabbat with those families a year and a half ago. Wow. So it's hard for not to fight. It affects all of us, right? You know, it's something that we think about every day. In fact, I actually this morning was on a call and I meant to say October 7th and I said 9/11.
I think that's a lot for a lot of people. Yeah. That association is very.
Yeah. So.
So you mentioned you go on dailygiving.org and you can join. It's very simple. How much should people give?
91% give $1 a day and 9% give between $2 and $101 a day. And basically, a lot of people sign up for everyone in their family, like that story. It's just such a wonderful way to teach your children about giving. It's very hard because you can't tell your children about the $10,000 checks you give or the whatever. They don't have a concept of money, but you can tell them about $1 a day. And it really is an unbelievable way to teach children about giving.
Hmm. And there's a story that I read of a woman that gave $2.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Someone I know, it was like May of the first year. And, you know, by then there's like one by one shy. Like it took a long time to take off, you know, like the entire first year, we only got 1,000, new givers. So it was like May, you know, when I started it, I sent it out to everyone I know. I spoke to everyone I know. And like, I think, you know, 100 people signed up in the first week, and then it was like slow sledding. You know, I would just call every night. I would call someone. I had in my head, like, I had to keep the momentum going every day, try to get one person. And so it was like May, and someone I know, a relative, signed up for $2 a day. And so I called her and I thanked her. And I said, why did you sign up for $2 a day? And I knew she was single and she was 36 years old. And she said, yeah, I signed up one for $1 a day for me and one for my future husband. And then she got engaged 6 months later. And, I told that story to a couple different famous people, and they kind of told it to people, and then it kind of got a little like whatever. And so people started signing up for $2 a day for different reasons, not just for a spouse, like to have a child or whatever. And the stories started coming in. Like in 2025, this year, at least 10 that I know about, 10 people have got engaged who signed up for $2 a day. One for themselves, one for their future spouse.
So is daily shidduch in your in your future?
I got enough on my plate, but maybe someone will watch this and we'll do it. Yeah.
So I want, you know, a lot of people will be listening in and seeing you speak about this thing that you've started, you know, for something so incredible, and they might forget that this wasn't something that you were intending, that you're a regular person, wife and children, White Plains, New York. You had an idea, and 6 years later, you're giving, you know, millions of dollars a year. Walk people through that process from you have an idea to the actual implementation. Like, a lot of people might have their own ideas, and they might feel like, okay, it's a good idea, but it's never going to work, or I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. It was infinitely harder than I could have ever imagined. And I think had I known how difficult it would be, maybe I wouldn't have gotten it off the ground. It was like that naivety. And I really feel like that epiphany was, you know, it was something deep that I felt that I never felt before, this moment of clarity, like I thought I had a $1 billion idea. And even when it was very difficult at the beginning, it was like, no, I have to keep going. It was like deep inside me. And if I had to say one trait that I have, it's like this stick-to-itiveness, this like unrelenting, you know, I'm not giving up. I'm sure I get that from my grandmother who survived the Holocaust, you know. And it's funny, as time goes on, as you get older and you learn more and you learn more about yourself. Over the last couple of years, I've just learned a lot more about myself and who I am and where I came from, and learned self-compassion, self-love, which wasn't easy. People might think, oh my gosh, what a great life. You know, he's giving all this money. But for a long time, it was also partial. I loved it. I wouldn't trade places for anyone in the whole world, but it was a burden of the pressures that I felt. And, I think that you don't know. You don't know till you try. And like listen to that, try to quiet the noise and listen to that deep part inside you. And if you feel like what you are doing is the right thing, then you can't go wrong. Mm. And I also just I see the hand of God every day. Even this, by the way, on the way here, like we met, right? We just met. We were getting on the flight to LA. I came up to you. I was like, you know, you were like the the person we're all seeing on our social media after October 7th. Like, and we're just, I just came to thank you for what you, just seeing you with being out there. And
I just like the day before seen a video that I think Elon Gold made about Daily Giving. Right. He was here as a guest. So, you know, everything kind of like worked out.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I'd be sitting here if we didn't meet that for that one moment on the plane. And I was like, whoa, you know what? I was like, Shai, he knows about Daily Giving. I was so like excited.
I had the exact, like, he knows who I am.
Yeah, that's weird. It was awesome. So just how God works in such mysterious ways. And especially if you know you're doing right, what's right for God, for the world. I think that I cannot tell you how much of the hand of God I see every day. And so it just keeps you going when you just feel like, hey, and what doesn't matter the results. Now, I will also say that I think that when it comes to the nonprofit world, there are a lot of overlap. There are a lot of organizations that do very similar things. And I think that's a problem. And I'm trying to, you know, it's a lot of ways. There's only so much money to go around. And if you have organizations that are doing almost the same thing, that's not a great thing either, because they're using the same resources, but that's a separate issue.
So, and you mentioned that it was way, way, way more difficult than you were expecting it.
Yeah.
Which is basically a good thing, but you didn't know how difficult it would be.
Yeah.
But what were some of the obstacles? And
so I thought the couple months from when having the idea to where we were able to become a 501c3 nonprofit and build the website and do due diligence on the organizations we were going to give the money to and all that. Based on the feedback I got from everyone I told the idea, they're like, oh my God, that's a no-brainer. Of course I'll sign up. So I really thought that we'd have like 10,000 people in the first couple months. Mm-hmm. I was so naive. And I was so disappointed. So disappointed. And what I found is that we all get asked to give a lot, right? Like in 2025, like our WhatsApps are like, it's like every day there's a sob story about someone who died early and needs money, or this kid or that, or like it just someone's special surgery for this young child. The kids don't have enough money. Like, don't have enough money. It's just like every day, not to mention you open your mail, it's like envelopes just coming. And I thought for a dollar a day, like it would just be so easy. People just like, of course. But I think there's as I said before, that I think giving has such a profound effect on us, the giver, that it can't be easy for us to do. So if Mel Robbins has a now famous 5-second rule. If an idea that requires action takes more than five, if you don't take action on an idea within 5 seconds, you almost never will. And I think that's what happened. I saw this over and over and over again. I went to APAC. We started January 1st, 2019. That March, like 2 months later, we had started. We were like, I don't know, 200 people. I brought 1,000 Daily Giving business cards. And I did not go like this and hand them out. I had 1,000 conversations over 3 days with people there. And out of those 1,000 conversations, I'm not talking about the majority said, oh, yeah, this is great, I'll do it. I'm saying the 100 that looked me in the eye with full intent that said, this is incredible. I'm going to sign up. Shai, guess how many signed up out of those? At least 100 that were like, they meant it when they said it.
So out of 1,000, 100 said that. I would say about 20, 25
people. 6 people signed up.
Really? Just six people from the 100 who said.
Yeah. And so I guess...
What is that? Why is it so hard for people?
This is what I think. Like I said, I think it's so good for us that God had to make it a challenge for us to do. Too many causes overwhelm us. We can't decide which one matters most. Can we trust the organization? Does my small gift even make a difference? And then when it comes to giving, their fear creeps in, right? Like, do I even have enough to spare? So all these thoughts go in. So even from the moment you have the thought of like, oh, it's a great idea, I want to do it. And then there's not to mention like, oh, I already give so much charity. Why do I need to give another one? Like, I'm giving every day. Or like, oh, I want to decide who gives, who I give it to. Daily Giving decides and I don't get to decide. Which is actually the most holy part of giving, is that when you give charity and you don't know who it's giving to. I mean, we were very transparent. You do know, but you don't know the actual person. That's actually the holiest type of charity, when you give it and the person who's getting it doesn't know who gave it. Right. So for all those reasons, it's very difficult. So what my mission is to do, my personal mission is to, you know, get more people to give. It's not just the daily giving, but, and I said before, it's not the dollar, it's the daily, is to become a giver, is to realize that you started like, yeah, people look at generosity as a character trait. Some people are generous, some people are not. And I'm saying that's not true. That's my theory that I'm out to prove.
Well, I think you're proving it quite well. I think, you know, the numbers speak for themselves.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think we should be at hundreds of thousands by now. I mean, people say all the time, did you ever imagine in a world believe that you'd be this big? And I was like, yeah, I'm constantly disappointed. That's why it was such a burden. It was always so hard. I was constantly disappointed. But only in the last year, as I've started to, like I said before, kind of learn more about myself and learn about how the human mind works and learn self-compassion and self-love, do I realize that it's really hard. And not to take it personally and not to feel like I'm a failure because people aren't giving. And it is nothing short of a miracle in some ways that we got 22,000 Jews, overall mostly are Jews, so 22,000 Jews to agree on something. Not just sign, like if you thought about how long, if you had to go get 22,000 Jews to sign a piece of paper for free, just sign a piece of paper agreeing on something, that's not, wouldn't necessarily be so easy. We have 22,000 Jews from 43 countries who are all giving money together every day. That's like a miracle. So I've learned that, and now I'm finally like starting to be able to be happy and proud of what we've built. Yeah. And please God, you know, thank you for this opportunity that maybe some people will be inspired today by hearing something we've said, and
I really hope so. But
as well,
I do want to point one thing that you said, and that I think is really profound, the constant disappointment. Mm-hmm. I think if you are setting your mind on changing the world, as you are doing, as many activists and advocates that we've had on this show and the dozens that we still want to have on the show, one of the things that you should expect is constant disappointment, because your goal is to change the world. Mm-hmm. And the world doesn't change on a daily, weekly, monthly, or even annual basis. It changes very slowly. I would say I'm mostly disappointed than not disappointed. Now, I cherish the wins, the successes, the gains. But even for me, when people say like, oh, look what you did on campus, da, 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 and I say like, no, I feel like what I've done is very, very small relative to what I was hoping and still am hoping to do. So I would lean into that.
Yeah.
Daily constant disappointment, which drives you to get more people.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. I really feel, I felt like, yeah, such, that resonated so much.
It's,
exactly.
I really hope that two things happen from this conversation. One is that everyone's listening, watching, goes and dailygiving.org and signs up, even if it's just $1 a day. As we've seen, it's already, it adds up quite quickly. Two, that they tell their friends about it. And three, that they take their own ideas and run with them, even or especially if they make them constantly disappointed.
Love it.
So we're going to end with what we call the Here I Am Lightning Round, a series of rapid-fire questions. There's no right or wrong answer. It's just whatever comes to mind. Jonathan Doneth, what is one thing people don't know about you?
I'm a really good golfer.
I don't know anything about golf, but what does that mean? How good are you?
I'm a single digit handicap, which for a small white Jewish guy is a pretty good thing. Golf is like my happy place to just be out in nature and spend a couple hours, and it's extremely challenging. And, yeah, that's something probably people don't know about me. I'm a good golfer and it's my happy place.
What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
I mean, I think that way more people have this idea that Jews are cheap, yet I really truly believe we're the most philanthropic people in the world. So,
well, I don't know if most or not, but clearly you have the receipts to show we or not.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, I have a, once a week, I'm privileged to see firsthand the giving nature of our people. And it is beautiful, and it's a privilege to be able to see how giving we are as a nation.
When was the last time you cried?
Ooh, love that question. I cried, and I'm not a crier, but actually last week when the hostages, with those 20 living hostages, were released, I couldn't stop crying. I actually had patients that morning, and I remember had already was crying that I went into a room of a patient, a non-Jewish patient, who said, I have a, on my glass doors, when you walk into my office, I have a Bring the Hostages Home, We Stand with Israel poster that's been up there since October 9th. Oh. And a non-Jewish patient said, wow. I was like, first of all, it was like amazing to see that they knew whatever. And I started talking about it, and I started crying in front of the patient, which that has never happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you could have any Jewish person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, dead or living, who would that be?
I think I would have to say the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I'm not Chabad. I mean, I think I am Chabad in my soul, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe was someone, I read his book by Joseph Telushkin called The Rebbe. And he was one of the most amazing. I was alive. I never got to meet him. I think he died when I was maybe 11 or 12, but I love, I guess, akin to him is his love for Jews, of all Jews. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter, religious, not religious, observant, not religious, not observant. Like, he loved all Jews, and his book just, he's transformed the world. Talk about, like, his send, you know, my dad's a professor. As a child, I remember my dad would go all over the world lecturing, and he would always, you know, go stay at Chabad, or the Chabad rabbi in Japan or wherever it was would be there to help them, and their emissaries just spreading light all over the world and the sacrifice they make. And so hands down, would be the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I'd love to spend a few minutes with him.
It's great what you said him, because he had a practice where people would come to him and with some illness or some issue, and he would give him a dollar.
Yeah.
Give him a dollar with right. would sign something on the dollar, and people would keep that dollar. That daily giving. Yeah. What is your favorite Jewish holiday?
My favorite Jewish holiday is Purim. My grandfather, we already spoke about, when he was about 90, he gave me my most prized possession. He handed me a Megillah, a scroll of Esther, mm-hmm. that he got from a 90-year-old man who was in a synagogue, who got it from his grandfather, who got it from his grandfather, who got it from his grandfather. And he gave it to my grandfather and said, none of my grandchildren know what this is, and they won't appreciate it. So why don't you give it to your grandchild? And he gave it to me. And I didn't know this laughter. He actually said, why don't you give it to your oldest grandchild? I'm the second oldest grandson. I found out later that he had actually offered it to my older first cousin, who I have a very special relationship with too. And he said, he was in medical school at the time. And he said, you know, I just won't have time to learn it, so why don't you give it to Jonathan? What a mistake, Shlomo. That's my most prized possession. And so I read that, this 300-euro scroll, I read it every Purim.
One day you'll be able to give it maybe to Shlomo's grandkids.
Yeah.
What is your least favorite Jewish holiday?
I don't know if I have a least favorite one. I guess maybe Tisha B'Av. It's a very sad day in the calendar. It represents a lot of destruction, where our temples were destroyed because of baseless hatred towards our own people. Unfortunately, we see that still happening today. And hopefully some of the work you're doing and what we're doing is going to unify them, and that won't happen anymore. So Tisha B'Av is my least favorite holiday.
When do you feel safest?
I feel safest when I'm with my friends and family.
When do you feel least safe?
I once had a kind of sort of got attacked in a dark parking lot. So I still kind of feel my nervous system react when I go out and it's dark outside in the night and I am alone in a parking lot.
What gives you hope?
God gives me hope. I think sounds cliche to some people, but to me, in today's world, there's a lot to be afraid of. Being a Jew in America, you know, anti-Semitism being so rampant, it's frightening. It is frightening. I always wear my kippah, but like, I've gone to the airport recently and, you know, for the first time in my whole life, I was like, should I wear a hat? I checked it myself. I'm like, no, I'm going to wear a kippah. But the fact that I even asked myself that question, because of fear, is scary. And, you know, in Spain and France and Italy, and they all love Jews until they didn't. And America's been very, very good to our people for a long, long time. But until
no guarantees.
Until no guarantees. So I think it's very, very frightening. And so I think for people who don't believe in God and understand that everything's for the good, and I mean, I think we've seen these miracles, like biblical miracles of biblical proportion over since October 7th. It certainly gives me hope that I'm not in charge, and my pea brain doesn't know enough to know what's supposed to happen, and have faith that everything's going to be for the good.
Yeah.
That's what lets me sleep at night.
Well, finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel, the Jewish diaspora, the world in general. I'm going to say dailygiving.org.
That's so nice. I'm going to pick a different one.
Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Yeah. I think people should look up two organizations. Wow, they both just came on top of my head. Two in Israel, we've mentioned one already, but another one, Karen Orr, which is Blind Children with Multiple Disabilities. I think that's an unbelievable organization.
And let me translate that to people. Karen Orr literally translates to a ray of sunshine or a ray of light, yeah. Which is related to the helping blind children.
Yeah. And it's just unbelievable what they do. And the other one is Migdal Orr, also in Israel. And they have had, I believe, over 40,000 orphans have come through their system. And I've visited them a couple times. If you're in Israel, you can go visit. It's one of the most beautiful things you could see. The thought that goes into how they raise these children. They have, like a dorm system, like an apartment. And they have a husband and a wife who are pretty much newlyweds who were also orphans, who grew up in their system. And now they have their life and they live in this, they live in one room, and there's like a full apartment. It looks like a regular apartment. I think there's like 12 orphans in each apartment, and the mother cooks for them. And so they go through. There's a school on campus, and they have it's something spectacular to see. And you walk into the bedrooms, and they have each kid has their own bed, their own desk, their own everything. And then they have a game room, and it's so well thought out, and the love. And you see, it's Rabbi Yitzhak David Grossman started it. He won the Israel Prize. He was the disco rabbi, very famous. There's a book, one of my favorite books, called The Living Legend. It's about him.
Uh-huh.
And look into that one. That's a really special one, too.
So Karen Orr, that's K-E-R-E-N-O-R.
O-R.
Two words. And Migdal Orr, that's two words. M-I-G-D-A-L.
And then O-H-R.
O-H-R.
Yeah.
Jonathan, where can people find you and Daily Giving?
Dailygiving.org is a great way. A handle for Facebook and Instagram is @dailygiving.org, @dailygiving.org. And they could send messages and find me that way. And my email is drdonath, drdonath, @dailygiving.org.
Well, it's been a real pleasure having you. I really hope that people that are listening will at least go online to our YouTube channel and just watch part of the conversation, because you radiate light.
Thank
I don't
you,
know
brother.
If you've noticed that or if people have told you that. There's something about you that just radiates hope and light, despite your constant disappointment. And I think that's something that many of us aspire to. So thank you so much for coming, and here I am with Jonathan Donath.
Thank you, Shai.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."